I reach up to push him away, even as arousal floods through my center and pools between my legs. You're disgusting. He grabs my wrists, pulling me flush to his body until I can feel every hard inch of his cock straining against the fabric of his clothes. I'd teach you to love begging at my feet. My core contracts when his words hit my lips, and I suck them in as if his breath is my air. My fingers clench his shirt, but instead of pushing him away, I drag him closer. I'm tired of you playing games with me, I hiss. Is that what I'm doing? He questions. Stop! Anger snaps at my nerves. Nothing will get in my way of being Michael's bride, not even you. He leans back, his eyes flaring as his grip tightens around my wrists. And it's only then that I realize what I've said. Stupid girl. I see. One of his hands drops from my arm and rises along my side, goosebumps sprouting in every place his fingers touch. You thirst for power, he rasps, his palm ghosting across my collarbone before wrapping around my throat. I can fill you with it until you scream. My stomach jolts so fast, my legs tremble. His stare drops to my mouth. A loud bang echoes off the cathedral walls, and I jump, icy dread trickling through my insides. Leave me alone, I plead, pushing at his chest. He brushes his thumb against the underside of my jaw before he releases me. My body grows cold as he backs away, but I don't drop his gaze, even as my heart slams against my chest when I hear footsteps making their way toward us. Any second, and someone will see. Tristan keeps his eyes on me for a second longer before spinning around and disappearing down the hall, like one of the ghosts rumored to haunt the corridors. But his touch has branded itself on my skin. And when I turn around, Xander stands in front of me, his beady eyes narrowed and lips turned down.
Chapter 16. Tristan. Disgust and desire mix in my gut and explode outward, a volatile poison flooding through my system. And that's what I'm starting to believe my little doe is. Poison. Every time I see her, there's this need to push her until she snaps, breaking apart that painted-on poise she uses to fool the world. And snap, she did. She thirsts for the crown. Unfortunately, she won't find it at my brother's side. The only thing she's guaranteed for herself is death. But I can admit that beneath the annoyance and the uncomfortable situations I find myself in while I'm with her, there's a budding respect. Admiration for the way she's able to slip into a role so effortlessly. And it's because of that I'll make sure her execution is quick. She's a cunning little temptress, far from the innocent, blushing girl she claims to be. Gritting my teeth, I storm through the hallway off the cathedral into the main foyer. My fingers slide along the wood banister of the large princess staircase that sits beneath a sparkling crystal chandelier, splitting in two directions that lead to opposite wings of the castle. My boots click on the gleaming cream tile as I make my way up the left side to where my private quarters are. Oversized portraits line the ornate walls, and their eyes burn into me. Centuries of royalty judging me through the paint, as if they're as disgusted as I am from the way I allow this woman to twist me up and avert my focus. I pass by people in the halls, a guard and a few maids, but they don't look my way, knowing better than to bother me. Other than Lady Beatro, everyone gives me a wide berth. I haven't decided yet if the reason she doesn't is that she's drawn to my power and unable to help herself, or if she's simply stupid. Once I reach my chambers, I fling open the door, the echo of the slam reverberating in my ears as it closes behind me. I make my way to the table beneath the large bay window and grab the glass container placed in the center. Sitting down, I open the jar, and take out the rice papers and a few buds of hash, knots tangling in my stomach, and my cock straining, begging for relief that I won't allow. I will not make things worse than they already are by coming to thoughts of her. My fingers tighten around the paper's edges as I pour my focus into the task, hoping that if I do, the leftover feelings surging through my body will fade. I bring the joint to my lips and grab a match, striking it against the box until I hear the sizzle of fire. The first inhale swirls down my throat and into my lungs, the tension in my stomach easing. The heat warms my fingertips as it chars the small wood stick, and an image of my little doe spread out on the table, submissive and pliant, while the flame licks against her skin, flashes through my mind. I groan as my balls tense, my length growing rigid. My hand glides into my lap, fingers wrapping around my shaft through the fabric. But instead of readjusting, I stroke to the thought of her pretty pink lips, and how stunning they would look stretched around my cock, while I cut off her air by sliding it down her throat. My teeth bite into the end of my joint to keep it trapped between my lips, and I widen my legs, slinking down in my chair as I unbutton my trousers, my abs tensing as I imagine fucking the insolence out of her, of showing her what domination feels like as it splits her from the inside out. Her ass would be red and tender from me forcing the apologies out of her little lying mouth by pummeling her with my palm. Lust clouds my reason as smoke curls around my face, and suddenly, gripping it through the fabric isn't enough. I need more. Need to feel the rough friction of my calloused palm as I close my eyes and pretend it's a tight cunt, sucking me in and pumping me until I explode. Pleasure tiptoes from the top of my thighs and into my abdomen as I run my hand up the shaft, squeezing the tip until a bead of cum drips out. My balls tighten when I think of her tongue running along the underside of my length, tracing the throbbing vein. And the tension coils even tighter when I picture my dick stuffing her so full she can't even breathe as she swallows every drop I give her. The joint falls from my mouth, the end singeing the skin of my stomach, but I let it stay, throwing my head back and groaning through the pain. And then, right before I'm about to explode, I remember that she's marrying my brother, that he gets to experience every curve of her body and every lick of her tongue. My hands jolt back like someone has electrocuted them, and I stare down at my lap, my erection angry and throbbing as it begs for relief. I won't allow a female to interfere with my plans, especially not one who doesn't belong to me. She wants power. She'll have to kill me to take it. "You look spooked, sire." Xander's voice trickles through the door, and I press myself farther into the hallway wall, not wanting them to know I'm here. It's a rare moment. There are no guards around, and I shouldn't be here. But I couldn't sleep, and while I was preparing to slip through the tunnels and go roam the forest, I saw Xander slinking through the darkened halls and followed him instead. And now we're here, outside of Michael's private quarters, in the middle of the night. Xander rushed through the door, not even bothering to close it fully. But his mistake is my good fortune. I lean against the jamb, straining my ears to hear.
"Would you like some dreamless sleep potion?" Xander asks.
"No," Michael scoffs. "That stuff makes my mind fuzzy for hours." Xander sighs.
"That's the opium, sire. If it would help keep the nightmares away..."
"Don't speak to me like a child," Michael snaps. "If you want to help, figure out how to talk to spirits and make my dead father stay dead instead of tormenting me." My stomach flips. Michael has nightmares of our father. The resounding silence is thick.
"What?" Michael hisses. "I see that pathetic look in your eyes, Xander. Either say something useful or get the fuck out of my room."
There's a vile undercurrent to his tone, one I've heard whispered in my ear since I was born. In public, Michael has a charming, if not overbearing, personality, but it's in these private moments that the snake sheds his skin and comes out to play. Perhaps Lady Beatro and he are better suited than I thought. My chest twists at the realization.
Have you...
Spit it out, Michael snaps. Have you seen him again while you were awake? The resounding silence is thick. Shock punches through my middle, my mouth dropping open as I eavesdrop. Have you given any more thought to what I've suggested? To speaking with someone?
I'm speaking to you.
Yes, but I mean someone more equipped to help you with them, to figure out the root cause.
Another long pause, so heavy with tension that it bleeds through the walls. They would call me mad, Michael whispers. A grin sneaks its way on my face, satisfaction bubbling in my chest as I straighten off the wall and make my way toward the tunnels. My brother isn't as infallible as he would have everyone believe, and the people deserve to know when they're being ruled by a mad king.
Chapter 17. Sarah B. News of Michael's proposal has spread, and things are happening in the castle. Almost everyone in the king's inner circle already knew why I was here, but now their heads bow a little deeper, their spines notch a little straighter. Respect that I have done nothing to earn is handed to me on a silver platter, simply because a man with the right blood in his veins asked for my hand. Marisol came barging in at the crack of dawn, whipping open curtains and laying out colour swatches, droning on about the engagement ball and how it was my duty to plan it. She knows nothing of duty. Her blonde hair is coiffed, and her grey eyes spear through me as she shows me the 30th shade of purple and asks me to compare it to the last 29, as if I've been paying attention. Marisol, I hate the colour purple. What? She half chuckles. Is the colour of royalty, my lady? Great. Pick your favourite and we'll go with that. I groan, standing up from my place on the couch. I need some air. Marisol's eyes narrow as she stares at the two fabric swatches in her hands. But my words make her look my way. How come? My chest burns at her question. Do I need to have a reason, other than it's something I wish? Pursing her lips, she shakes her head. You have a very busy schedule coming up. You won't always be able to run off and do as you wish, especially once you're queen. The bite in her tone doesn't go unnoticed, and my nerves bristle. More of a reason to take advantage now, then. Besides, I pull my lips back into a thin smile. I have every faith that you and Ophelia can handle the rest of the ball arrangements. Am I mistaken? Marisol's shoulders draw back. Of course not, milady. It would be our pleasure. Fantastic. I stretch my neck to the side, the resounding crack unravelling all my pent-up tension. Have you seen Shayna? Marisol averts her eyes.
I haven't.
My stomach twists. We've been here for days, and ever since my new ladies showed up, it seems like she's disappeared completely. I'm curious to know what she's doing, but more than that, I miss my friend. I think I'll go try to find her. I move toward the door. Wait, Marisol screeches. You can't just go running around the castle on your own. Tension knots up my spine, and I turn, taking calculated steps until I'm standing in front of her. We lock eyes, and she sucks in a breath, holding my stare, but I don't say a word. Her fingers clench the swatches she's still holding, and she drops her gaze. I lean in close, my voice quiet and sharp. I wasn't asking permission, Marisol. You are not my keeper, and I will do as I please. I... Apologies, milady. Anger works its way through my middle and up my throat, but I push it back, allowing the uncomfortable air to sit stagnant for long moments. Eventually, I step away, smiling. It's settled then. I'm going for some air, and you'll stay here and plan the ball. I reach out, placing my hand on her shoulder and squeezing, my nails digging ever so slightly into her shoulder. I trust you'll do an incredible job representing me. After all, it's not every day a king chooses you to be his wife, and I need a stellar reputation. Her shoulders stiffen, and affirmation of what I suspected trickles through my insides. She's envious. Spinning around, I make my way to the door and turn the handle, stepping into the dimly lit hall. Someone appears in front of me, making my heart slap against my ribs. Oh, I gasp, my hand rising to my chest. Timothy, I didn't expect you here. He doesn't respond, just stands there, his dark eyes watching me. Still not allowed to speak. Sighing, I rest a hand on my hip. If you're always here, who's with His Majesty? This time he reacts, but only barely, lifting his brows as he takes a step closer. So you're my guard dog now, I take it. I run a hand down the sleeve of my dress. Very well, let's go for a walk. I turn away and move forward, hearing the clank of his footsteps behind me. It must be 5 or 10 minutes before I try to speak to him again. I'm sure I'm lost inside the maze that is the castle halls, but if Timothy isn't willing to step in and help a girl out, then I won't ask him to steer me in the right direction. Have you seen Shayna? I ask, trying for the 1,000th time to get him to crack. I'm not surprised when there isn't a response. Who's Shayna? A loud voice booms from around the corner. My footsteps stutter at the voice, and I stop walking when Paul appears, dressed down in tan corduroys and a light shirt, a monstrous grin on his face. Paul, I was hoping I'd see you again, I smile. His gaze falls behind me, landing on Timothy before they come back. Were you? Do you know Timothy? Better than anyone. Paul's grin widens, his auburn hair bouncing as he places his hands in his pockets. Timmy's my best mate. Genuine shock ripples through my chest, and I twist to look at the guard behind me. Oh? I turn back around, bringing a hand up to cup my mouth as I speak to Paul. He doesn't like to talk to me, you know. I think he's intimidated. Paul smirks. Of that, I have no doubt. Amusement floats through my chest, light and airy, and I grasp onto the feeling, hoping if I hold tight enough, it will stick. We're going on a walk. Would you like to join us? Paul hesitates, rocking back on his heels.
I'm not sure it's wise to be seen with me around the castle, milady.
I raise a brow, irritation bleeding into my skin. Why don't you let me worry about that? A beautiful grin takes over his face, teeth gleaming as he nods and walks right up to me, stretching out his arm.
Well, in that case.
I hook my hand in the crook of his elbow and allow him to escort me down the hallway, expecting him to lead me in the right direction, since clearly Timothy is content to allow me to walk around in circles. But he doesn't take us to the front of the castle like I expect. Instead, he leads us through narrow hallways and past countless rooms before we reach a small enclave with a dark wooden door. Is this a secret room? I glance at him. Paul smiles as he walks to the door and pushes it open.
Better.
The cool September air whips across my face as I walk toward him and into the open space. Clouds looming over the skies and hiding the sun, as usual in Saxham. Waves crash in the distance, letting me know we're close to where the Vita Ocean meets the cliff's edge near the back of the castle. But in front of us is a gorgeous garden, full of deep purples and stunning whites, small droplets of water beading on the petals, left over from the early afternoon rain. Gargoyles and sculptures are scattered throughout, dark green moss spreading across their sides and blending in with the grey of their structure, and a stunning three-tiered fountain sits in the centre, two black benches with gold trim on either side. What is this place? I ask. The Queen's garden, Paul says. I quirk a brow. The Queen Mother spent many days out here when she was pregnant with His Majesty, and then again with His Royal Highness. Grass crunches beneath Paul's feet as he moves to stand beside me. No one really comes here anymore, but it's a nice place to relax. It's beautiful. I walk away from him and closer to the fountain, my chest warming with every step. And then I look past it to the forest that surrounds us. Dense trees, a thousand different shades of green towering in the distance, reminding me of just how secluded the Saxham Castle is. Spinning around, I open my mouth, about to ask if it's safe to walk through, but the words stick on my tongue when I see Paul and Timothy huddled close together, my mute guard throwing his head back in laughter, his hand coming up to rest on Paul's shoulder. It's a shocking sight. I was convinced he didn't know how to laugh at all. A hollow ache spreads through the centre of my chest as I take them in, envious of the ease with which they enjoy each other's company. I'm not sure I've ever experienced that. I rack my brain, trying to come up with a single solitary memory of letting my guard down and just being with another person, but I come up blank. The ache grows, wrapping itself around the chambers of my heart and squeezing. A muffled laugh soars through the trees, but it's enough to call my attention away and pique my curiosity. It's coming from the edges of the forest, and without thinking it through, I follow the noise, walking straight into the pine. Twigs break beneath my feet, and I fist the fabric of my skirts, hiking them up as I make my way through the trees, searching for the laughter. And then two figures at the base of a thick evergreen appear, and my footsteps stutter as I grasp at the trunk in front of me, shrouding myself in the shadows of its leaves. Simon sits cross-legged, his eyes wide and his mouth spread in a giant smile. But it's the man he faces that steals my breath. Prince Tristan sits on the dirt ground, mirroring Simon's position, his back hunched and his dishevelled black hair falling over his forehead as his brows furrow in concentration. He holds Simon's arm steady in one hand, his other one moving back and forth, the tip of a fountain pen pressed against Simon's limb. He's the most casual I've ever seen him, wearing black trousers with matching suspenders over a cream tunic rolled up at the sleeves. My core spasms, heat rushing through every vein. They haven't noticed me yet, so I take the opportunity of being invisible, my eyes glossing over Tristan's body, the drawings on his forearms coming to life with his movements, as if they're living, breathing things instead of artwork inked into his skin. He looks unguarded, his features softer than normal as he leans over, the corners of his mouth tilting up while Simon continues to giggle next to him. Stay still, little lion. His voice is low and raspy, and the memory of his whispered words in the cathedral sends goosebumps sprouting along my neck. It tickles, Simon says back. I blow out a heavy breath, trying to control the ridiculous way my body is reacting to a simple thought, and I shift on my feet. A twig breaks, and Simon's head snaps up, his eyes squinting as they land on mine. Tristan doesn't even falter from his movements, ignoring that there was any noise at all.
Hi, lady, Simon beams. What are you doing here?
My heart pounds in my chest, making my hands clammy, and I clear my throat as I make my way closer, my eyes flickering between the two of them.
Exploring, I reply, smiling. What are you doing?
Simon's grin widens, his toy sword lying at his side. As I look closer, I notice one of his eyes has a dark hue, marring the light brown of his skin, and making it look welted and purple. I inhale a deep breath, but don't allow my gaze to linger, not wanting to make him uncomfortable, even though the thought of something or someone striking this boy makes my blood boil like a volcano about to burst. Glancing down, I realise Tristan is, in fact, drawing on Simon. And he hasn't acknowledged me at all, which makes my insides itch. I move even closer, and my foot snags on yet another branch. A slight twinge radiates through my ankle, and I hiss at the pain. Perhaps next time you decide to traipse through forests, you should dress for the occasion, Tristan says, his voice soothing my skin like a soft caress. I scoff and narrow my eyes, but he still isn't looking at me, keeping his focus on Simon's arm. I'm not traipsing. I heard a laugh and came to investigate. Now he stops, glancing up at me. You're out here all alone? Yes, I lift my chin. Well, technically, Timothy and Paul are back in the garden. I twist around to glance behind me. They're probably searching for me. Simon snickers. I bet they're happy you left. That's not very nice. My hands drop to my hips. I'll have you know I'm fantastic company. Well, yeah, but Timmy and Paul love each other. My brows draw in. What do you... Simon. Tristan's voice is sharp. My eyes bounce between them, but I let it go, filing away the information for later. Instead, I drop down, ignoring the way my corset digs into the very tops of my thighs from the maneuver. I don't want Tristan to know that he's right, that it is uncomfortable to be here with what I'm wearing. What are you drawing? Simon chews on his lip. I wanted a tattoo, but he said no. So it's a temporary one then? I lean in closer to look. And when I do, my lungs compress as if someone reached inside my chest and stole my very breath. I've seen artwork before. Hundreds of paintings hang in the castle and dozens more at my home in Silver. But I've never seen art like this. My eyes widen, heart thudding as I scoot forward to get a better look. It's stunning. And a knot lodges its way into my throat. The simple act of looking at it causing emotion to surge through my middle and lock itself into the cracks of my soul. The way Tristan's hand glides across his skin like a boat on top of water sends tingles trickling through me, as if he's touching me with every stroke. It's incredible the way he commands the pen. Intricate lines and shading from a device I can't even get to bleed right onto paper. The drawing itself looks as though Simon's skin has torn, like shredded fabric marred with gashes and holes. And behind it, the face of a lion, with such depth in its features that part of me is convinced it will tear through his arm and leap out to devour me whole. My mouth gapes as Tristan continues to draw, mind blown at his talent. He glances at me again, and I snap my jaw closed so fast my teeth smash together. A grin ticks the corner of his lips as he looks back down. What made you want tattoos, Simon? I ask, ignoring the way my stomach feels like 1,000 butterflies are taking flight. It's an unwelcome feeling. I'd much rather stay here on the ground. Simon shrugs, chewing on his bottom lip as he stares at Tristan's face. He has them. My eyes flick to Tristan, whose jaw clenches as he continues to work. And they're too scared to hurt him, Simon continues. I thought maybe if I had some, they'd fear me too. My mouth dries, a balloon expanding in my throat. Tristan leans back, flicking the hair from his face. You're all done. Simon's gaze widens. I love it! You think it will work? He blows out a breath. This is for you, not for them. Forget about them. I don't know how, Simon sniffles, moving his arm back and forth, the eyes of the lion following the motion. What happens when it washes away? Then I'll draw it again.
Lady Beatro?
A loud voice rings out from behind us, and I snap my head up, locking eyes with Tristan, so many unsaid words floating in the space between us. I have despised no one more than I do him. He's vile and crude and everything they warned me he would be. And yet, right now, I don't hate him at all. Timothy appears through the foliage, his brows drawn down and a scowl marring his face. I sigh, standing. Hi, Timothy. What took you so long?
You should not run off.
A smile breaks across my face. I would have done it sooner if I knew that's all it took to hear your voice. Besides, I lift a shoulder. I'm not a child, and I don't appreciate everyone pretending I am. His jaw tenses before his gaze moves to Simon and Tristan, his back straightening.
Your Royal Highness.
He bows. Tristan's features harden into stone as he stands, and I swear the air grows cold as he morphs from the man he just was into what everyone else gets to see. The scarred prince. He doesn't speak, but as he moves to walk by me, his hand brushes against mine, our fingers tangling for the smallest moment. And the way it makes my heart stutter out of rhythm should be the biggest warning I've ever had. But like I've done with almost every emotion that concerns the prince, I ignore it.
Chapter 18. Tristan. The upstairs of the Elephant Bones Tavern has a narrow hallway with a small bathroom and two bedrooms flanking either side, one of which is kept clean for whenever I choose to stay, which, I'll admit, has been sparse as of late. I've been spending more of my time at the castle, both because Lady Beatrice fascinates me, and also because I like to be available when Simon needs to slip away. But Edward tells me that morale is down since I haven't been making as many appearances, so tonight I'm here to remedy that. Apparently burning the body of the king's commander wasn't enough to prove I'm still focused on the cause. I walk up the stairs and down the hall to the room, confusion lancing through me when I hear muffled noises from behind the door. My brows draw in, and I twist the handle, the air whipping across my face as the door swings open, smacking against the wall. It cracks as if it might shatter from the impact, and it's enough to startle the two people naked and in the bed. They jump up, scrambling. The woman squeals when the man moves off her, and she grapples for the sheets, drawing them up around her chest, her eyes growing wide as she takes me in. I tilt my head, cataloguing her features, rage burning through me when I note her frizzy blonde hair and freckles. Little doe's lady-in-waiting, rosy-cheeked and freshly fucked by my most trusted soldier, Edward. How dare he bring her here? My fists clench at my sides, my gaze swinging to him as he pulls on his garments.
Your Highness, I
raise a hand, cutting him off mid-sentence, my eyes trailing along the form of the girl as she curls in on herself.
Did you bring me a gift, Edward?
He swallows as he finishes buttoning up his trousers, running his hand through his disheveled hair.
So thoughtful of you, I continue.
The girl scoots farther back on the bed, presumably to put more distance between us. I walk toward her until I'm standing at the side of the small mattress, and I reach out, grasping her naked arm, pulling her from the spot before shoving her onto the wood floor. She makes a screeching noise, and the sound of her fear sends adrenaline coursing through my veins. This seems to snap Edward out of whatever daze he was in, and he moves forward, grabbing the woman's clothes and walking to stand next to me as he thrusts the matter. I chuckle. A bit late for modesty, don't you think? Her cheeks heat, and I wave my hand in a placating motion through the air. By all means, sweetheart, get dressed. She pulls her garments closer to her chest, but she doesn't make another move. Irritation vibrates through my bones. I don't like to repeat myself.
Shayna, please, Edward pleads. Do as he says.
I don't want him to see me,
she whispers at the ground. I'll tell you what. You take a few minutes, Shayna. Get yourself together. Stepping in closer, I reach down, running my hand over her tousled hair.
and then come downstairs, where we can figure out just what to do about this situation.
She knows nothing, Edward whispers. Anger makes my tongue sharp. She knows enough.
He presses his lips together, and for the slightest moment I think maybe he'll fight for her. But he simply drops his head and nods.
10 minutes, I say, turning to the door and heading to the staircase.
My shoulders tighten, my mind racing, warring between disbelief and disappointment. I've never once questioned Edward's loyalty, but then again he's never given me reason to. I don't want to make an example out of him, but sometimes these things are unavoidable. The stairs creak as I storm down them, and when I make it to the bottom I head straight across the room until I reach Belinda, who's sitting on the lap of Earl, running her hand through his straggly beard and cackling in laughter. They both straighten as I approach, and she jumps up, dropping to the ground.
Sire, she whispers.
There's a woman upstairs with Edward. Make sure they don't leave.
Of course.
She reaches out, grasping my hand and kissing my rings, and a rush of satisfaction flows through my veins at her subservience. Out of all my followers, she is undoubtedly the most loyal. If they try to run, kill her, and bring Edward to me. She straightens, her eyes maniacal as they gleam. I make my way to the raised platform, where a singular black velvet high-back chair sits, a throne for me to watch over my people. It's nothing close to the real thing, to the one I deserve, but for the moment it works. My boots clunk against the wood as I plop down, spreading my legs wide and drumming my fingertips on the arm of the chair, gazing out over the room. Everyone is busy slurping up soup and bread I had Paul send from the castle, and the tabletops are piled high with fur-lined coats to prepare for the winter months, a gift for their loyalty. A handful of minutes pass until I hear the heavy thud of footsteps. My eyes flicker to the corner of the room, past the long picnic-style tables, to where the edge of the bar meets the staircase. Edward and his new love step down, their heads close together as they make their way toward me, Belinda prodding at their backs. I rest my chin on my knuckles, watching while they weave through the tables and benches until they reach the edge of the platform. The noise around us quiets as people take note of something happening, and it pleases me that I don't have to call their attention.
"Kneel before greatness, girl,"
Belinda hisses, shoving at the girl's shoulders until she drops to her knees. Edward cuts Belinda a strong glare, stepping forward until he's placed himself between them. I smirk at his obvious attachment and wait for him to follow suit. He doesn't, and my grin drops, my insides seething.
"Do you no longer bow before me, Edward?"
His eyes lock on mine as he drops to his knees. Unease trickles through me at his hesitancy.
"Friends?"
My fingers grip the edge of my throne as I lean forward and look out into the crowd.
"It would appear we have a new comrade in our midst, and from the castle, no less."
Grumbles spread through the crowd.
"Tell me, are you here to join our cause?"
My fingers scratch against my jaw. Shayna doesn't respond, her shoulders trembling as she stares at the ground. Her disobedience makes my blood crackle, aching to string her up and make her scream. Use her as an example to show what happens when you displease me.
"Or maybe you were only here to get fucked by the king's commander,"
I spit. She gasps, her head snapping to mine, her cheeks growing ruddy. Edward moves forward.
"Stop."
That word. That simple, silly word is the knife that severs my control, and I surge from my seat, flying down the platform until I'm in front of him, the back of my hand striking out across his face. His head whips to the side, blood spattering on the ground from where my rings cut into his flesh, and he stumbles, catching himself before he falls. I wait until he rises before snatching his arm and twisting until the ligaments pop beneath my fingers. He drops to his knees, a small groan escaping from his gritted teeth.
"You do not tell me to stop,"
I hiss. He winces.
I brought her here for you.
My brows jump, surprise filtering through me. I hadn't expected him to say this.
Oh?
I ask, my eyes glancing at her, wondering if he's simply trying to save her from death.
So you are a gift.
I release Edward and move toward her instead.
Tell everyone your name, I command.
Shayna,
she whispers, tears streaking down her face.
Shayna.
I let the syllables roll off my tongue, debating whether to announce that I know exactly who she is. But at the last moment I decide against it.
And who are you to the king?
No one.
My nostrils flare as I stare down at her. Speak louder so everyone can hear. She sits up straighter, her chest heaving with heavy breaths.
I said, I'm no one.
And his new queen? I quirk a brow. Her breathing falters, and even I can feel the eyes of the people as their stares burn through her back.
No answer for that one, is there?
I murmur, crouching down and lifting her chin.
And who are you to me?
Her tongue swipes across her lips and she swallows, glancing at Edward. He nods at her, his hand rubbing up and down his arm. She turns back, her dull gaze locking on mine.
I'm whoever you need me to be.
I huff out a small breath, pinching her jaw before dropping my hand and standing upright. She's not loyal to the cause, and even if she was, it doesn't change the fact that Edward brought an outsider, a dangerous outsider, into our home base, and into our operation without telling me. But she's a new tool in my arsenal, one that I can find use for. Crossing my arms, I stare down at her. You may rise. She puts her hands in front of her, pushing off the dirty wood floor as she stands, brushing her fingers down the front of her dress. Stepping in close, I palm the back of her head, leaning in so no one can hear.
You will be loyal to me, or I will make you watch as I disembowel everyone you love. Her body shakes beneath my touch. And then I'll chain you up like a broodmare, and let the hyenas stick their cocks wherever they please until you're gaping and broken. I will keep you alive solely for their savage pleasures.
I pull back to look into her glossy, terrified eyes, and my free hand cups her cheek.
I'll continue even when you're begging for death. Do you understand?
She nods, and then hiccups, her cheeks wet with tears. I step back, smiling as I face the rest of the room with my arms out wide.
Everyone, welcome our newest warrior. She's here to join the fight.
Chapter 19. Sarah B. I'm not an idiot, Marisol. I know how to dance. She purses her lips, her favourite thing to do these days, and places a hand on her hip. This will be your first dance with His Majesty. Walking to the edge of the ballroom, I grab a glass of water and sip from it, wishing this dreadful class would be over with. I've been taking dancing lessons since I was a small child. I know what to do. It's just awkward when your partner is another woman, that's all. I lift my shoulders. She huffs. Milady, I'm just trying to keep you from embarrassing yourself and the king. My eyes narrow, her thinly veiled insult sliding across my skin like needles. No, of course we wouldn't want to do that. She steps over to the cylinder phonogram, its large bell end sticking out like a brass instrument, and moves the narrow edge down until music plays. Breathing in deep, I crack my neck just as the door to the ballroom on the far side of the eastern wall opens. Did I miss anything fun? Shayna's voice flows across the room, and I spin, a smile breaking across my face. Shayna! Where have you been? I've missed you! I throw out my arms and drag her into a hug, my chest warming as I do. I'm dreadful for disappearing, aren't I? She tightens her hold on me, I have so much to tell you, she whispers in my ear. Nodding, I break our hug, my hands trailing down her arms until I can squeeze her fingers with mine. Curiosity prods at the corners of my mind, wondering what it is she has to say, and where it is she's been. Anything I can help with? She asks, glancing around. Not unless you can find me a better dancer. I turn to Marisol, scrunching my nose. No offence. Marisol sighs, her blonde brows furrowing. This is pointless. A laugh escapes me. Oh, come on, Marisol, lighten up. I walk toward her, reaching out and gripping her shoulder. Everything will be just fine. You're doing an incredible job managing everything, and I'm sorry I'm making things difficult for you, but I do know how to dance, I promise. Her eyes soften, the corner of her lips tilting up, and she nods, exhaling a heavy breath. I'm sorry for being so, well, you know, she shrugs. Planning a ball is a lot of pressure. I smile, which is why I tasked you with the responsibility. I know you can handle it better than anyone else. Her features lighten as she nods. Why don't you go take a break and allow Shayna and I to catch up? I squeeze her shoulder, hoping that she won't argue with me. I know she doesn't wish to be here any more than I do. Thank you, m'lady. She curtsies before she walks across the polished ballroom floor, disappearing into the castle halls. It isn't until the door shuts behind her, echoing off the arched ceiling and stone pillars, that I drop my shoulders and relax, turning to look at my closest friend, the one who's felt like a stranger since arriving here. A smile breaks across my face, and she mirrors it, both of us bursting into giggles. I don't think she likes me, I say through the laughter. Shayna's blue eyes sparkle. I don't think she likes anyone. My hands rest on my hips, my head cocking to the side. I'm pretty confident she likes my soon-to-be husband fairly well. Her brows shoot to her hairline. No, do you think? Is she one of his mistresses? I lift a shoulder. Who's to say? I'm sure he has several. For all I know, you could be one. She shoves at my shoulder. Please, Sarah, be realistic. Well, what do I know? I brought you along to be my lady-in-waiting, and yet you've been like one of the ghosts you claim haunt the castle. Her smile drops, fingers tangling in front of her. I'm sorry. Don't be mad. I just... Looking to the side, her cheeks grow rosy. My chest pulls tight. What is it? I've met someone, she whispers. He's a general in the king's military, and he's... everything. My eyes widen, surprise dropping like a lead weight in my gut. Already? He's very handsome, and very good at other things. The pink on her cheeks turns splotchy. I lift my brows, unable to stop the grin from spreading across my cheeks. And you call me the wicked girl? Her hands shoot up to cover her face, and she groans into them. I'm foolish. Looking up, she reaches out to grab my palm with hers. But I won't disappear on you again. I'm sorry I did. The middle of my stomach burns in warning, just like it always does when my intuition is pricking at me, screaming to pay attention. Well, do I get to meet the mystery man? Her features stiffen, and the change in her energy spikes through me like an arrow. Something is off. I'd love that, she says. But her smile doesn't reach her eyes. I want to go back to the Queen's Garden. Will you remind me how to get there? I peer up at Timothy from behind the top of my poetry book. He sits in the chaise by the fireplace in my sitting room, his body the most relaxed I've seen. Ever since he was forced to speak to me in the forest, he's loosened up. And as long as we're in my private quarters, which he actually steps into now as long as other people are present, he graces me with his beautiful voice. Turns out, he's not such a dead fish after all.
Why?
He questions. My brows rise and I set down my book. Well, I'd rather leave the castle entirely, but I'm sure you won't allow that, since apparently becoming engaged is akin to regressing into an adolescent who needs a nanny. His forehead scrunches.
Are you calling me your nanny?
I shrug. What else would you call it? He purses his lips.
I requested to be your guard.
You did? My stomach flips. I don't know if I should be offended you think I need one, or honoured that it's you. He tilts his head.
You're going to be the queen. If anyone needs protection, milady, it's you.
The way he says it sends a chill racing down my spine, as if he knows something, something that he isn't letting on. From whom? I prod. His eyes move from where they were settled on me to Ophelia, who is peeking at us from over her needlework. When I twist to face her, she drops her eyes back down, pretending as though she isn't paying us any mind. Never mind, I say, standing up. If you don't know how to get to the garden, just say that. He scoffs, rising from his seat.
I know every corridor in this castle.
Oh? My brows rise. All of them? Anticipation lights up my insides. Ophelia, we're going for a walk. Would you like to come? I ask to be polite, but everything within me is hoping she says no. No, milady. Marisol is supposed to meet me here to go over the dinner menu for the ball. I crinkle my nose. That sounds awful. She smiles. That's why you're having us do it instead. Walking over to Timothy, I link my arm in his. His jaw ticks as he stares at where we're connected, and I grin up at him, moving us toward the door. The second it opens, he drops my arm, adopting a glacial look. The man from moments earlier, disappearing into the air. I'm silent the entire way, memorizing our steps so I can sneak away and come back alone. But once we're at the garden's door, I spin around, pointing my finger at his chest. You said you know every corridor.
I do.
Even the hidden ones? His dark eyes peer down at me, as if he's deliberating on how to answer. And that alone is enough to send excitement sparking through my insides. He knows what I'm talking about. Will you show me? I press. He's silent for long, strained moments, the muscle in his jaw tensing over and over. Finally, he nods. A smile creeps on my face, satisfaction worming its way through my veins. He reaches to his side, placing his hand on a wall sconce. I watch his movements, fascinated, my heart pumping in my ears. I wonder if when I look back, I'll think of this moment as the one where I realized everything hides in plain sight. Because the wall I was just staring at disappears, revealing a dark and narrow passage in its place.
Chapter 20. Tristan. When Michael and I were children, my father was often too busy to spend time with us, and my mother didn't care. Even if she had, that's not how it works in the monarchy. Queens aren't meant to raise their offspring, they're only meant to birth them. As a result, and as was expected, nannies were the ones who brought us up. The other kids who roamed the halls were families of the servants, ones who we either weren't allowed to play with, or they weren't allowed to play with us. But Michael somehow always had his group of friends, and they would never miss an opportunity to come find me and rain down terror. I was easy prey. I had no interest in being the center of attention, and much preferred staying on the sidelines with my sketchbook, watching how everyone else interacted. You can learn a lot about human nature when you observe from the outside looking in. For some reason, my brother didn't enjoy that about me. He's enjoyed nothing about me, nor I him. We're connected only by blood. And even as a child, I would imagine chaining him up by his limbs and draining him of every drop, if only to sever our connection. Back then, of course, I didn't have the wherewithal. And it only takes so many times of being thrown in the dirt and told you're a freak for you to believe it. that because you're a little different, you're somehow less than. It was beaten to me by angry fists and brushed off as kids will be kids. And the fact that, when it came down to family, I was unseen and unimportant, compounded the feeling. Being the second-born son gave me freedom, yet they forced me to live it in Michael's shadow. But at least for a time, my father cared. He would take me to the cliff's edge, showing me the constellations, and how even in the darkest of nights, they light the way home. I treasured the quiet evenings with him because it was the only time I felt like I belonged. He saw me, and he loved me. But as I aged, the late-night meetings grew further and further apart, his time for me replaced with preparing Michael to be king. Just like with everyone else, eventually, I was forgotten. And the stars don't shine as brightly when you stare at them alone. Michael was the crowned prince, and I was just me. So I never understood why, when he had everything, he always made sure I had less than nothing, too. I thought maybe as we grew older things would get better, but the opposite turned out to be true. The shoves turned to prolonged torture, and bruised ribs turned into fractured bones. I slunk away into the secret tunnels of the castle just to get away. It was then I realized they led through the mountains and into the middle of the forest. And it was also there I first decided to stop being Michael's victim, spending hours visualizing the day I would take everything from him, and everyone else who wronged me, or stood by silently and watched. That's the thing about resentment. It grows and wraps around every piece of you like ivy, feeding off the anger until it's so enmeshed that it becomes you. A living, breathing, pulsating incarnation of hatred. And for me, the boy who was tossed to the side like garbage, I had nothing but time to pour water on the weeds, let it fester and grow until it blotted out everything else. Michael has always been stronger physically, but I'm vastly more intelligent, and he doesn't deserve to sit on the throne. The scar on my face twinges, and I shake it off, gritting my teeth as I focus back on the dark wood of the chest that I keep beneath my bed. My insides dance as I close the metal lock on the front and place it back in its hideaway spot, before grabbing a lit candle and making my way out of my room and into the hallway. I move through the corridors until I make it into the tunnels. It's the only way I can get to my brother's office without being detected, and since it's the middle of the night, no one will be around. The tunnels are dark and narrow, the chill from the stone seeping through the walls and settling in my bones.